As a business owner, it's important to keep your business connected. Spectrum Business is committed to keeping your business online whenever and wherever you need us, all backed by the Spectrum Commitment. Get fast, reliable internet starting at $40 per month when bundled, or level up your internet speed and get a 3-year price guarantee. Learn how Spectrum Business can help your business stay connected at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line, plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for limited time and subject to change. Max one offer per account.
The Rich Zeoli Show podcast is sponsored by Mike Veneria Jr. with Osperity Private Wealth.
Hi, I'm Mike Veneria Jr., Wealth Management Specialist. Make your retirement dreams a reality by creating your retirement plan today. Call me at 856-252-0107.
Whatever you like to do, I'm on X at Rich Zeoli. I wanted to answer a question that I was asked by, let's see here, if I can find this, let's see, Joanna. Hi, Rich. On what basis and on whose authority would the El Salvador government release this man? Does a congressman or woman have the authority to request or demand the release of any individual when the president says no? Well, they can ask. They can demand. I mean, there's nothing against asking or demanding. Doesn't mean you're going to get what you ask or demand, but you can certainly make the ask or make the demand. So, I mean, you can ask or demand. Anyway, you can ask or you can demand, but there's no guarantee they're going to go along with it. So, okay. who would pay for the flight? Who would pay for the flight? Venezuela? No, we'd probably pay for the flight. I wouldn't really worry about that. You'd get the air miles. You know what I mean? No, I'm saying, I mean, that's the, if the Supreme Court, I'm just giving you different scenarios here. If the Supreme Court comes out and says, in a unanimous decision, that the administration needs to facilitate the removal of this man from El Salvador, one of two things can happen. They can either A, say, fine, we'll pick him up, call the president, say, release him, we're going to pick him up, we're going to fly him to whatever other country, but he's not coming back to the United States. So then, I mean, you're not getting this guy back in America. They're not getting this guy back. The other option, too, is the president can turn around and say El Salvador doesn't want to release him. The problem, though, is that, you know, is El Salvador really going to say no to Donald Trump? No. So is anybody going to believe that? No. And it's going to leave people with the impression that he's not telling the truth and he's defying the court. So my advice would be the cleanest and easiest way, if it comes to that, would be just, fine, load him on a plane from Venezuela and fly him and deport him someplace else. And then you're done. You've complied with the court. You still don't have this guy coming back to the United States. It's some other country's problem. There you go. But I don't know what other country wants him, though, is the other issue. So I don't know how that works. But the order was to deport him, just not to El Salvador. Okay, the administration says it made a mistake in deporting him to El Salvador. But that's your remedy if it comes to that. It's not a very hard remedy to pull off. And you could just do that. Now, if the president comes out and says the president of El Salvador won't release him, I just don't think people are really going to believe that. And I think they're going to just double down on saying he's just defying the Supreme Court. I don't think it's a fight that's necessary to pick, is my point. Load him up on a plane. Fly his ass fly him someplace else and deport him there. Let him go, wherever that is, wherever that other place is, and be done with the story and move on. Either way, you win, because the guy's out of the country. So You know, I mean, but I don't know what the Democrats are hoping to achieve here. Because even if the president goes down there and listens to, or I should say a member of Congress asks the president of El Salvador and they release him, once he comes back to U.S. soil, there's still a deportation order. So then he's going to get arrested and deported again. So what have you achieved here? I mean, is their goal just to get him out of the prison? Well, okay. I mean, that's understandable. But that's an issue for whatever country he goes to. I mean, if the country believes that he's a gang member and is a threat and they lock him up, that's not really a problem for the United States government. That's a problem for that country. In which case, then you can negotiate with them. You can try to work on a way for him to gain his release in that country. You can negotiate those things, as members of Congress and senators often do, especially ones that control the purse strings. You can certainly do all those things. But I don't know if there's going to be any guarantee that that's going to happen. But we'll see. I mean, ultimately, we'll see what the court rules. And that's not going to be for a while because the judge in this case right now has said that the administration has till the 23rd to update the court on documents with that. Whatever that judge rules, which is most likely that Garcia has to be returned, is going to be appealed back to the Supreme Court. Then the Supreme Court's going to take some time to review it, and then they'll issue their order. So that's how this plays out. But either way, he doesn't come back to the United States. Either way, he's not going to be back in Maryland. He's not going to be back as being this Maryland man that everybody falsely describes him as. Now, as far as this press conference goes at 4:30, there are a couple of popular theories about what we're going to hear. It will feature a surprise guest, either a trade announcement with Japan or the Easter Bunny. You think the Easter Bunny is going to be at the White House, Matt DeSantis? Is that your guess?
Well, those are the two popular theories on X right now. And Justin and I were discussing it off air, and he brought up a great point. I hope this is what happens. The special guest is the Easter Bunny, but he's announcing a new trade agreement. That's kind of the best of both worlds. I like that idea.
The Easter Bunny makes the announcement.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
We've made a deal with the Easter Bunny for lower tariffs on Easter baskets and eggs and that sort of thing, Cadbury cream eggs and whatnot.
It's festive. I think it's pretty great.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a popular theory. No doubt about that. I will say, it's just like what Jimmy Fallon and I talked about the other day. We said, Biden really thought he was talking to a talking bunny. Like, he really thought there was a talking bunny when the Easter Bunny was there. And that's what I said. He was hiding his own Easter eggs. So I love that joke. Makes me happy. Makes me happy. All right. We have our friend Dr. Victoria Coates joining us momentarily. Before we do, I just want to remind you that CNN does not hate our country. CNN had to cut away from this the other day to let everybody know that they don't hate our country. This is data bash. I've been meaning to play this. Cut 16.
We've been listening to a lengthy live press conference inside the Oval Office with the leader of El Salvador, Bukele, where we have heard a lot of bits of information, a lot of news nuggets that we want to definitely focus on, a lot of some misinformation as well. But we want to digest all of this right now with our terrific panel here and our reporters. Jeff Zeleny, I want to start with you. You are at the White House. Before I get to you, I just want to say, for the record, since we heard President Trump say in the Oval Office that CNN hates our country, CNN does not hate our country. That should go without saying. I've been here for 32 years, and I see a rhetorical device in him trying to say such a thing.
Dana Perino is the good one. That's on Fox News. That's Dana Bash.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Good to talk to you, Rich, on this very special Wednesday edition.
It is a special Wednesday edition. Any guesses on who the special guest is going to be at the White House press briefing?
Well, the Easter Bunny is a good guess, but yep. I... I would hope, I mean, maybe it's the Japanese lead trade negotiator, and maybe they came to a deal today. Yeah. I know the president was going to be in that meeting. And that, I mean, that is what I think everyone's been waiting for. You know, as we discussed on Friday, I'm just back from Abu Dhabi. You know, we talked to all of their investment vehicles. Everyone was very shaken last week. I think they would like some reassurance this week. And if out of the box, we get a good deal with Japan, which has been, you know, one of our, I mean, it's been one of the president's focuses since the 1980s. Maybe like they're eating our lunch. This is totally unfair. It's true. You know, why are there so many Japanese cars on our streets and no American cars on Japanese streets? You know, it's just, this is unfair. And if he can get to that deal, I'm confident they'll get to the deal. But if they got to the deal today and they've got that as the announcement at 4:30, it'll be really exciting.
It would be very, very exciting. No question about it. And we would love to have that announcement. I think a deal is what everybody's waiting for. And Scott Bessent said, he said, whoever comes to the table first gets the best deal. So there you go.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think the Europeans need to get their action gear. I think the minute the new German chancellor, Merz, takes his job, I think in about 2 weeks, he better be at the White House hat in hand with an offer of what Germany is going to do. Because if Japan gets in here, South Korea, Vietnam, all of these Southeast Asia countries, you know, that should send Europe a very strong message that they need to get their acting gear and get over here.
Yeah, they do indeed. No question about it. Where do things stand with China and all this, you think, Dr. Coates?
Well, I think this would send also the best possible message to China, which is, you know, quite frankly, we don't need you anymore. You know, yeah, you're a big economy, but if we're doing deals with Japan and India and the Europeans, you know, pull themselves together, I know that's a big if, but you know, that's the EU economy is the same size as China, and they're the second and third to us. So, you know, China then better get with the program as well, unless they want to lose access to both the United States and to Europe. And I don't think they can tolerate that.
The idea of moving our manufacturing away from China, which is something I think is critical. I mean, I was reading an op-ed today by somebody in the New York Post talking about how China makes most of the pharmaceuticals in this country, the generics, the on-brand ones. But we also know about all the components to various things like iPhones, et cetera, and everything else. Tell me about the tariff exemption the president put into place for iPhones and computers and things like that. What does that encompass?
Yeah, that's sort of a balancing act for the things that are going to take us a little bit of time to either home shore or friend shore, and the things that are dependent on these rare earth minerals that everyone's talking about. And important to point out that China said they were stopping their exporting of rare earth minerals to the United States as part of their trade war on us. And I think that's what people need to focus on. That this is not a normal thing to do. If one is an exporter and one makes money off of one's exports, then the key to that relationship is to export, that it's a transactional relationship. And those of us who have been concerned about the situation and our dependence on them for, you know, about 10 years now, the point of it is, for that is we always thought they were going to weaponize it. Mm-hmm. And the panda huggers amongst us kept saying, no, they'll never use this as a weapon because they need to sell us the rare earths more than we need to buy them. Well, apparently that's not true. And they are willing to weaponize it. And they do want to inflict pain on us. And so that is going to be a problem. And I think that's what the president's trying to preempt with these exceptions.
It seems that the sooner we can decouple with China on things like rare earth minerals and magnets, et cetera, the better for all of us, because this is a country we just can't simply trust, bottom line. And if they can just cut these things off on a dime, and we're so reliant on them, even if we work out a deal now, that doesn't mean that in 5 years they won't just cut things off for us. We can't be in a position like that. And unfortunately, if we have not learned our lesson from COVID-19, that this virus was made in a lab. And in my opinion, and I know that, you know, this is unprovable, so obviously it's just my opinion, but I believe it was intentionally released from the lab back during the military world games. I know that that's obviously something nobody can prove, but that's my personal opinion. Or at least I could say it's very plausible that they would do something like that. If that's the case, and we can't trust this country, either way, we know they lied about the lab leak. We know that they covered it up. We know that China was engaged in that. We can't trust them. They're not our friend. So the sooner we can decouple with vital things that they could literally cut off at just if their mood changes, the better for all of us, no matter how this works out with trade and tariffs. I'm not saying we don't do business with China. We should do business with China. But the sooner we can get away from having to rely on them for things that are vital to national security and our everyday life, particularly if there's an emergency and a crisis, I think the better.
Cool. This is, should just be basic common sense at this point. And I would hope even the Democrats would grasp the simple wisdom of this. When you just said, you know, what if they changed their mood in 5 years? I was thinking right then, what about 5 years ago? You know, what they did in 2020, 2019 timeframe. And I agree with you. I think it was intentional. Personally, I don't have any evidence to support that. But, you know, who cares? They did it. Yeah. Either way. They did it, and either they were sloppy or they were malfeasant or they were both. And you know, they are willing to do that. They are willing to cover it up, prevent the rest of the world from, you know, from inoculating itself from it. And you know, they wanted to spread the pain out evenly. And they still refuse to come clean about it. They still and they still want to try to go on with the scientific cooperation that we have underwritten for lo these many years. And so that all of that funding has to stop. I mean, and that's something the administration has already moved to do. And, you know, if our scientists can't survive without collaboration with the communist Chinese, then our problems are worse than we thought. But I think we can survive quite well without them. So, you know, they shouldn't have access to our national labs anymore. And, you know, all of this needs to be shut down. And nothing would make me happier than if they changed their behavior. And all you have to do is look at Taiwan. There is nothing inherently in the Chinese sort of genetic makeup that prevents them from being a successful democratic capitalist system. That's what Taiwan is, one of the most successful in the world, the producer of some of the most sophisticated, manufacturing, tech manufacturing writ large, but also semiconductors in the world. That's great. That could be mainland China. I mean, Hong Kong, they killed it, but that did grow there naturally. And so this is certainly possible. And maybe down the road, they will have, you know, a different leadership and a different approach. But right now, we just can't be this vulnerable.
You know, the other part of this is twofold. Number one is the idea that China gets to see our technology. If they're building these computers and iPhones there, they're getting access to our technology. And that's a problem, number one. Because a lot of these things also go into our military guidance systems. And, you know, I mean, the president has an iPhone. I mean, everybody's got an iPhone. So that's number one. The second thing is, I remember when, in addition to you being the former national security advisor, deputy national security advisor to President Trump, you were also very high up in the Department of Energy. And when the Secretary of Energy, Secretary Dan Briette, was over there in China, and he issued a warning, right, to the United States State Department about what the Chinese military was doing in Wuhan with the lab, with the virus.
Yeah, no, Dan was, you know, right at the forefront of this because, of course, the Secretary of Energy controls our national labs. They're all in the Department of Energy. And you know, when you move into the department and you start to learn about what they're actually doing, you know, this is just an incredible asset for the American people. And we need to manage it as a national security asset. And so as, you know, Dan was learning about our collaboration with various Chinese institutions, I mean, he was horrified by the kind of vulnerability and exposure it gave us. And, you know, at one point at the end of the first Trump term, you know, there was a request for Chinese nationals who had access to our national labs. And that was when you really saw the deep state spring into action. Oh, no, we can't, you know, we can't penalize these people. This is science. You know, this transcends politics. It transcends, you know, geopolitics. Like, I'm sorry, no, it doesn't. You know, they are eating our lunch in every possible way. And, you know, 10 years ago, you could have argued it was primarily economic with the kind of war, military buildup they're on and Secretary Hegseth had some interesting things to say about that this week. You know, their military buildup should terrify all of us and redouble our determination to maintain our military edge over them and that of our allies. And it, you know, if not, we're going to find ourselves in a real bad place.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. It's great to have her on the show. She, of course, is Philadelphia's own and the vice president of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. So before I get into some foreign policy stuff, I just wanted to ask you, I mean, all the documents that are coming out right now about Crossfire Hurricane and the extent to which the deep state went to try to frame Donald Trump as both a citizen and as a candidate and as president of the United States to taint him with this idea of Russia collusion, this flat out lie that they created and cooked up here and then used it as the impetus to spy on American citizens and infiltrate a presidential campaign. Now that the FBI director Kash Patel is releasing about 700 documents that were previously classified, any thoughts that come to your mind during all this, Dr. Coates?
Yeah, I mean, I just think about how much time we wasted on this in the first term. And, you know, Kash and I were on the NSC at the same time, living through this, watching all of the investigations, watching our colleagues, our former colleagues on the NSC, you know, parade across the stage to testify against the president and Congress. It was embarrassing. It's amazing to me we got anything done. And we actually got quite a bit done in hindsight. I think for Kash, as it is for me, this is personal. This is something that they did not just to the president, but for everyone who was in good faith serving the president and trying to further his agenda. And, you know, Dan Bongino published a list of people who were also surveilled on that. I'm on that list.
Yep.
You know, so I don't know if that's true or not, but it's terrifying to think that so many American citizens got caught up in this just ridiculous witch hunt against conservatives. You know, first and foremost, the president, but then everybody who was serving, because I was on that list because I was working for Ted Cruz in the 2016 primary. And so I was suspicious. I hope they get to the bottom of it. You know, I'm literally cheering them on from the sidelines, and it's really important work because we cannot have this happen again.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about some foreign policy issues right now. The special envoy, Steve Witkoff, over there with Russia, Ukraine, how are things looking right now? The prospect of finally, once and for all, I mean, the president's been critical of both Russia and Ukraine, keeps saying that Russia should not have started this war, and he did use that language, and said he never would have started it had he been president. I do agree with that point. Where do we stand now with ending this thing?
Well, Special Envoy Witkoff did come back and say that he has a clearer parameter now of what it's going to be Putin's end state. So I guess that his job now is to communicate that to, you know, to the president, see if it's acceptable to the president, if it's something that will be acceptable to the Ukrainians. You know, I think President Zelensky, with all due respect, needs to stop talking. He just gave, I think, it was a very problematic interview to 60 Minutes on Sunday night, saying that President Trump needed to come to Ukraine, you know, and see the war. I'm like, no, he doesn't. You know, he didn't need to go to Syria to see the war, to take the actions he took against Bashar al-Assad in 2017 and 2018. And I don't think he has the time to go sit on a train for 12 hours each way to get to Kiev like Joe Biden did. So I think Zelensky needs to, you know, calm down, you know, and become a constructive partner in this. And, you know, that's an important point about the rare earth discussion we were just having. If he were smart, Zelensky would step forward right now and say, yeah, China's cut off their exports. So you know what we're going to do? We're going to, instead of slow walking this deal, you guys want, we're going to accelerate it because we are a partner to the United States. The United States has been hugely generous to us. Let us be generous to you in your time of need. And we're going to step up production and we're going to make you our exclusive buyer and all of the other good things that are in that deal. You know, that's what he should be talking about right now. Not making demands of the president.
Yeah, no question about it. This is a great opportunity for Ukraine to do that, and for the United States to be able to reap the investment that we've made in this country. And it's also an opportunity then for Europe to stop making Vladimir Putin rich and funding the war against Ukraine by buying all of his oil and natural gas. This is an opportunity for Europe. And, you know, when the president goes out there and says, if we're going to make a deal here with Europe, they've got to buy our natural gas and they got to buy our oil. That's in their best interest to do so, because it is so infuriating to me. They're giving Vladimir Putin $1 trillion in 2024 alone. And then, you know, here's $50, Ukraine. I mean, it's a joke.
No, it's mind-boggling. And, you know, as Pennsylvanians, we could, as we know, massively increase our natural gas production.
Yep.
And we could have a nice export facility, and we could be shipping that stuff across the Atlantic all day long, which would free up a lot of Gulf product to go, among other places, to India, for example, or to Japan or to Taiwan, all of our allies who want this product. And, you know, that's what we need to be doing now. And the Europeans, I mean, God bless them. The Baltics and the Nordics have all weaned themselves off Russian gas. So it is apparently possible for Europeans to do this. And so I would very much hope that, you know, there's talk of a pipeline coming up through Azerbaijan to Europe. There's a potential pipeline coming up around the Western Horn of Africa through Morocco to Spain with Nigerian natural gas. That's what they should be talking about, not, as you said, giving $1 trillion a year to Vladimir Putin so he can wage war on their continent.
Before I let you go, since you are the author of the book Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win, there's an opinion piece in The Wall Street Journal, which I'm sure you've seen. Trump has a chance to strike a deal with Iran. Tehran has backed itself into a corner, and that boosts the odds of lasting peace through diplomacy, written by John F. Kerry and Thomas Kaplan. So your thoughts on that, Dr. Coates?
I did read that, and I did circulate it to a number of my colleagues with the tagline, here's your Iran policy, read this and do the opposite. John Kerry's ability to, you know, do his James Taylor diplomacy and get every issue wrong. I mean, he assured us with tears in his eyes in 2015 that under the terms of the JCPOA, the Iranians were going to cure cancer. That's what their nuclear program was going to do. That's actually, I tracked that quote down because I could remember it, and it's in my book. So it's documented if anyone wants to check on that. But somehow they haven't done that over the course of the last decade. And we appear to be no closer to a cure to cancer, thanks to the Iranians. And we do seem to be a whole lot closer to an Iranian bomb. So I thought that was the height of chutzpah for Kerry to take to the pages of the Wall Street Journal to share his wisdom on preventing the Iranians from getting a bomb. That was quite rich.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But can we make a deal at some point? What happens next with all of this with Iran? And I know you retweeted your friend Senator Ted Cruz, who I should mention as the introduction to your book, The Forward, retweeting Mark Levin on this issue. What are we looking at happening now? Do you think is there a way to keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, and is there a way to get a lasting peace in the region?
Oh, there always is, if you have the stomach to do it. And I'm always happy to be in the good company of Senator Cruz and Mark, who I'll be with in Jerusalem week after next. So looking forward to getting his views at that time. But, I mean, the key here is that whatever might or might not be negotiated in Oman or in Rome in coming weeks, that hews to the president's vision. And I was encouraged by Special Envoy Witkoff's sort of follow-up tweet after his Hannity interview saying that this would be President Trump's deal. President Trump has been very clear that the deal needs to prevent the Iranians from getting a nuclear weapon, that is not a path for them. And I think we were all deeply concerned to hear Special Envoy Witkoff use the numbers from the Obama-era nuclear deal, the JCPOA, the 3.67 level of enrichment. You know, that is literally straight out of the JCPOA. Just pick a different number, 2.5, whatever. But don't echo the terms of the deal the president rejected. You know, that was a real problem for a lot of people, I think. But hopefully he has learned from that experience. Obviously, he's new to this. And, you know, diplomacy is a beanbag. I mean, it's not easy. So you know, if he did learn, no harm, no foul. And going forward, hopefully he will hew very closely to the president's vision, because I think that's what, you know, staunch conservatives, and I would put Ted and Mark in that camp, sure. That's what we want.
Well said. And that's what his job is to do, which is to reflect the president's vision. No doubt about that. Dr. Coates, as always, we appreciate it. Please follow her on X at Victoria Coates. And you must read her book, Battle for the Jewish State. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it.
Of course. Have a wonderful Easter.
Happy Easter.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, we're waiting for the White House press briefing with a special guest. It may or may not be the Easter Bunny. Just hit my microphone. So let's take a quick break. The big story of the hour brought to you by Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile, V-A-N-A-R-I-A. If you have not yet seen a dentist this year, you need to do so, VanariaDental.com. And let me tell you about Garden State Earthworks, because they're great. My buddy Lou Vargo, any water problems you have in your yard, he's going to take care of them for you, guaranteed. That's the Garden State Earthworks difference. They drain the water away once and for all. It does not get into your property, and you are good. So I want you to call Garden State Earthworks at 856-848-4444. 856-848-4444. They will come to your home, drain the water away before it gets inside, destroys your basement, your foundation, your swimming pool liner, whatever water problems you have. They never get better on their own. And they're super busy this year because they're the best in the business, and you don't want to just use a landscaper. You want to use Garden State Earthworks. But you call them, tell them I sent you. They're going to make you a priority. 856-848-4444. The work is guaranteed. GardenStateEarthworks.com.
The Rich Zeoli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Senator from Maryland, Chris Von Hollen, who is down in El Salvador, has been denied his request to visit Kilmar Albrego Garcia. Van Hollen traveled to El Salvador on a grandstanding fundraising photo op with the intention of meeting with him. And he was denied the request that he made to meet with him. By the way, there's nothing wrong with members of Congress going to meet with somebody. Remember this, because I know a lot of people are suggesting he's violating the Logan Act or something. Careful. Let's not forget, our friend Tulsi Gabbard traveled to see with her own eyes, as a member of Congress, the situation in Syria. There's nothing wrong with a member of Congress or a senator going on a foreign trip. They happen all the time. They're called junkets, and they happen all the time. Governors do them, too. You can't negotiate American foreign policy. I mean, you can talk about foreign policy. You can engage in those. The Logan Act is there to prevent somebody from making a deal, for lack of a better word, on the United States' behalf. That doesn't mean you can't talk about it. They do this all the time. Governors, senators, members of Congress will fly to another country, talk to the leaders there, take photo ops, talk about trade, talk about this, talk about that. Happens all the time. There's nothing wrong with it. So I just want to clarify that, because, as usual, social media is rife with misinformation of people suggesting this senator is violating the Logan Act. He's violating the Knucklehead Act, which is that he is down there advocating for the release of a gang member, which is bad politics, in my opinion. But he certainly has the right to do it. I mean, just like you have the right to go to Israel, see with your own eyes what's happening in Israel. You have the right to go to any. I mean, you're a member of Congress. You can certainly do those things. You can request to meet with somebody. You can ask the president, you can visit with the president, you can have coffee, you can have tea, you can do whatever you want. You can talk about what you'd like to bring back to Congress, what you could talk about, a bill you'd like to propose that could benefit both countries. You can, but what you can't do is you can't sign something that would make the United States a party to any action, for example. Now, let's say you're a governor and you go to a foreign country and you want to make a nice little symbolic deal where it's like New Jersey and Israel are going to agree on cooperation for blah, blah, blah. Yeah, they do that stuff all the time. It's photo op stuff. But regardless, Van Hollen's trip, the El Salvadorians have denied him the opportunity to meet with Albrego Garcia. So that's the latest on that. At a press conference in El Salvador, Van Hollen said that he had met with the country's vice president, Felix Ulla, who told him it would not be possible for him to speak with Albrego Garcia in person or on the phone. He said, I asked the vice president if I could meet with Abrego Garcia, and he said, well, you need to make earlier provisions to go visit the prison. I said, I'm not interested at this moment in taking a tour of the prison. I just want to meet with Mr. Abrego Garcia. He said he was not able to make that happen. Van Hollen said he offered to come back next week to meet with him, but he was told that they couldn't promise that he'd be able to meet with him then either. The vice president also said he could not arrange for Abrego Garcia's family to speak to him by phone. When the senator asked if he could do so, the vice president told him that the U.S. Embassy must make that request. And then he went on to say that the United States government is lying about Abrego Garcia being a member of MS-13. So that's his argument right now, that the United States of America is lying. Big if true. Certainly big if true. But otherwise, he's down there advocating for the United States of America to bring back an MS-13 gang leader who has an order of deportation against him. That's what I said earlier in the show. It's called rolling the political dice there. But if these Democrats want to go down there and grandstand, knowing that it's not going to lead to anything, they're probably going to do it. Because it's not going to lead to anything. So, I mean, if this is where they want to be, it's just, I don't really get it. You know, I don't get it. It's like, who are you winning over here? What's your goal exactly in all this? Like, I'm on the side of the sympathetic MS-13 gang member who was deported, went through due process and had a legal deportation order against him. I'm on that guy's side. I mean, I don't really understand the optics of this, I guess. But let him do it. I mean, certainly not helping their cause, but as we wait for the special announcement or special guest at the White House, there's a lot going on right now in other news that I wanted to share with you as well. And that is, let's see here. If I can go to this. Aha! Let's do this. Here we go. I can find it. Sorry. I was just finding it, and then I was trying to find it. And then, yes, I know what it was. It was the Attorney General of the United States, Pam Bondi, announcing a lawsuit against Maine's Department of Education over their refusal to protect women and girls in sports. Now, let me say it again for you. The state of Maine doesn't have to take federal funds. It's not obligated to do so. It doesn't have to. If they don't want to, they don't have to. But if they do, then they've got to follow Title IX. They have to follow Title IX because that's part of the deal. If they don't want to take federal funds, then they don't have to. There's no requirement that a state does. If you don't want to take federal funds for the highways, you don't have to. But if you do, then you have to make sure your drinking age is 21. Otherwise, you can't get the federal money. There's all kinds of different things that come with this, the strings that are attached to these different grants and other things. You want to be a private college. If your state wants to just completely fund its education system on its own, have no federal dollars involved, then you don't have to follow Title IX, and there you go. That's not the case in Maine, and that's not what Maine is looking for. Maine is not arguing that they are independent of the federal government here. It's not a states' rights issue. The governor is incorrect in her claim on that. But here's what the Attorney General said today, announcing this lawsuit. I think she's making the right decision on this. This is an administration that is standing up for women against biological men who are trying to compete against them and take their spots in sports, etc., and in the locker rooms. And this is a winning issue for the Republicans, being on the right side of this issue. The Democrats, once again, are on the wrong side of this issue in a big, big way. I don't understand why they keep doubling down on this. I don't understand anything that they're doing. I really don't. I don't get it. But they don't ask me for my advice. And certainly I'm happy to not give it to them, because I'm more than comfortable with them losing. But they just keep doubling down on stupidity, on these political issues that nobody agrees with them on. And this is another example of that. So, I mean, even Gavin Newsom is lying and pretending that he's on the side of women in sports. He's lying, but at least he's lying and saying it. Maine's just doubling down on this. So here's Pam Bondi announcing the lawsuit today. This is Cut 22. Take a listen.
Today, the Department of Justice is announcing a civil lawsuit against the Maine Department of Education. The state of Maine is discriminating against women by failing to protect women in women's sports. Pretty basic stuff. This is a violation of Title IX. The Department of Justice will not sit by when women are discriminated against in sports. This is about sports. This is also about these young women's personal safety. I met many of these women throughout the past weeks and months, and what they have been through is horrific. We have exhausted every other remedy. We tried to get Maine to comply. We don't like standing up here and filing lawsuits. We want to get states to comply with us. That's what this is about. We have repeatedly notified Maine of its infractions and urged them to remedy the situation to protect women. We've stripped grants from Maine through other departments, and we are going to continue to fight for women.
Good. And if Maine doesn't want to take federal funds, and if Maine does not want to be part of it, then they don't have to. They don't have to. They can be independent and they can do whatever the hell they want, and that's fine. Although I would argue that if there's a lawsuit in the state of Maine on behalf of these women's organizations, they'd have a lot of friends of the court briefs on their side saying it's unfair to the women in the state of Maine. But it would no longer be an issue in the federal government's eyes because we're not talking about federal funds. I just don't understand why the Democrats keep fighting this losing battle. I just don't understand why Democrats keep fighting there. Who are you fighting for? What, like dozens of people? I don't get it. I just don't get it. Here's Maine's Attorney General, Aaron Frey, on CNN. CNN does not hate America, by the way, just so you know. They clarified that. They don't hate America. It looks like it's about to start, the White House press briefing. Oh, it is starting. Okay. Let's jump in here to the White House, the press secretary holding a briefing, and we'll see what the special guest is here as we continue along on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
The will of the American people. Maryland Democrat Senator Chris Van Hollen rushed to Dulles Airport this morning to fly to El Salvador, potentially using taxpayer dollars to demand the release of deported, illegal, alien MS-13 terrorist. The Democrats and the media in this room have continually and wrongly labeled Kilmer Abrego Garcia as a Maryland father. There is no Maryland father. Let me reiterate. Kilmer Abrego Garcia is an illegal alien, MS-13 gang member, and foreign terrorist who was deported back to his home country. And when Kilmer Abrego Garcia was originally arrested, he was wearing a sweatshirt with rolls of money covering the ears, mouth, and eyes of presidents on various currency denominations. This is a known MS-13 gang symbol of hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. Abrego Garcia was also arrested with two other well-known members of the vicious MS-13 gang. And two separate judges found that Abrego Garcia was a member of MS-13, and that finding has never been disputed. And just this morning, it was revealed through Maryland court documents that Abrego Garcia's wife petitioned for an order of protection against him for two instances of domestic violence in May of 2021. And here is the order right here.
There you go.
The court ordered that the respondent committed the following acts of abuse. Once in May of 2021, assault in any degree. And on May 4th of 2021, he punched and scratched his wife, ripped off her shirt, and grabbed and bruised her. This is from a court in Maryland. So not only are Democrats rushing to defend an illegal criminal foreign terrorist gang member, but also an apparent woman beater. To set all of that aside, the basic fact that he was illegally inside our country and had a lawful deportation order made him subject to removal back to his home country of El Salvador. And if he ever ends up back in the United States, he would immediately be deported again. Nothing will change the fact that Abrego Garcia will never be a Maryland father. He will never live in the United States of America again. And the United States Supreme Court ruled unanimously that the President of the United States and the Secretary of State could not be compelled to forcibly retrieve this citizen of El Salvador, who is currently locked up in a maximum security prison in his home country due to his MS-13 membership. To remind the media and the Democrat Party, MS-13 are among the most vicious and dangerous individuals in this world. They pose a direct threat to the United States, El Salvador, and any other country who maintains basic law and order. MS-13 rapes innocent girls and women, runs sex trafficking operations, murders for sport, and terrorizes law-abiding people. That's why El Salvador President Bukele made it clear this week that he will not be releasing this MS-13 gang member from his prison. But that is not enough. All of that is not enough to stop the Democrat Party from their lies. The number one issue they are focused on right now is bringing back this illegal alien terrorist to America. But where are the Democrats applauding the fact that southern border crossings just hit a historic low? Where are the Democrats supporting our brave men and women of law enforcement who are putting their lives on the line every single day to arrest the violent illegal alien invaders that the previous administration allowed into our country? And where are the Democrats when innocent Americans are victimized by illegal criminals that Joe Biden let in? It's appalling and sad that Senator Van Hollen and the Democrats applauding his trip to El Salvador today are incapable of having any shred of common sense or empathy for their own constituents and our citizens. Nobody knows this more than the woman standing to my right, Patty Morin, whose beautiful daughter Rachel was brutally maimed and murdered at the hands of an illegal alien in August of 2023. Patty no longer has her daughter because of the failed Democrat Party's open border, and these are policies that President Trump is bringing an end to. Patty should not have to be here today, but she is, and we are grateful and we are honored for her willingness and her request to share her powerful story with the world. Thank you, Patty, for being here.
Thank you. A lot of you don't know the whole story about Rachel and about the crime that was committed against her. Even us, her family, we didn't know all the details. They kept most of it close to their chest, the detectives, because they didn't want to do anything to hurt the case. They wanted to keep the integrity of the case, so they kept everything close. I sat for the last 2 weeks in her trial, and we saw layer upon layer upon layer of evidence against the accused, an illegal immigrant from El Salvador. And the things that we thought, well, maybe this might have happened, we didn't know, but when we were at the trial, we got all the puzzle pieces. And I want to share some of those things with you. You know that Rachel's a 37-year-old mother. She has 5 children. We've walked the trail for the last 25 years that we've lived in Maryland. It's a safe place for our family. It's where we go to get a little bit of New England, because that's where we're from, New England. When she went on that trail that day, she was not planning on dying. She wasn't planning on walking to her death. She was planning on going to the grocery store with her girls afterwards. Victor Martinez, he waited for her. He waited for her to come closer. He saw her. He saw that there was nobody around. He attacked her. He dragged her 150 feet, blood gushing from her head. It left a 150-foot trail of her blood to the culverts, where he picked her up. He threw her against the wall of the tunnel, and he raped her. But before he did that, he stopped on that trail, and rocks, still stained with her blood, he used them to hammer her head against those rocks. They say at least 20 times they could count the cuts in her head. They said that when they did the autopsy, and I've seen the pictures, there's a 6-inch square in the back of her head where the skull is shattered the way that you would crush an eggshell in pieces. 3/4 of her brain hemorrhaged. Her right and left side of her face bashed in. Her beautiful face bashed in. Her head bashed in. Broken bones, fractures. He takes and he drags her some more. He drags her through the thorn bushes. She has all the scrapes and cuts on her body. There wasn't one inch of her body that didn't have some kind of injury, whether it's bruising, broken bones, contusions, the scratches. She had a fractured rib, fractured nose, fractured skull. And then he takes her into the tunnel and he picks her up. He throws her against the wall. Blood is gushing from her head. Her hair is soaked in blood. And they showed us pictures of her body against the wall, outlined. The blood outlined her body. And you could see where the blood ran down around her as he was raping her. And then he threw her down and raped her some more. And then he strangled her because he didn't want her to be able to live to tell the story. They said that when they did the autopsy on her neck, that one of the things they do is they open up the neck and they look to see how far the injury is. And they went all the way down as far as an injury is possible, hemorrhaging in the muscles, because of how strong and violent the grip was around her. These are the